Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode. Before we get started, just wanted to let you know that we are up for Best Local Podcast by Kansas City Magazine, and we'd really appreciate your support. We're trying to win this for the second straight year, and we can't do it without you. So if you can, go ahead and go to kansascitymag.com, and you can search for the Best of KC 2020. We're in the politics, news, and media category, and you can vote for us for Best Local Podcast. Thank you so much for your support, and here we go. Welcome in to State Your Line, a podcast for Kansas Cityans by Kansas Cityans. We are the Ritz Brothers. Today is May 26th. The Lake of the Ozarks is on the hot seat firmly, in front of the national media right now. And it was Backwater Jacks that I think went most viral, but I'm sure there were other culprits of this as well. Which I'm very sad about, because like I said last week, I said, shh, don't tell anybody that the Ozarks doesn't know about the global pandemic. And then what did we do? Everybody found out about it. Everybody found out what was going on at the Ozarks.
Well, the people that live at the Ozarks still don't know about the pandemic. It's just like, again, the outside world the outside world now knows that that people at the Ozarks don't know about the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I just think, and I don't know how to feel about this whole thing. Like, it's so easy to just pile on all these people and pile on these bars, and they should be, like, they should feel bad. The people who went there should feel bad, probably. And the bar owners and operators should feel bad. And it's not safe, and it's not the right thing to do, in my opinion. But kids have been doing the wrong things on spring break and at the Lake of the Ozarks for a long, long time. So this isn't anything new, and it isn't anything. I mean, we joked about it last week. Like that, I was not surprised at all. Like, I was not shocked at all. And for it, like, I think Ozarks has gotten a lot of popularity now because of the show. But because it is just – but I also think the Lake of the Ozarks is truly, like, a unique place.
The business is at the Lake of the Ozarks. Like, I mean, I've watched the show Ozark. I know that this is their time to make all the money that they can for the year is in the summer. So, I mean, you can say shame on the business owners, but I mean, at some point, I mean, the business owners have to make money to stay afloat. Like, I mean, do we just want all the businesses to run down? It's a hard situation. I don't know the right answer, but I'm not super mad at the businesses for wanting to make money on one of the biggest weekends of the year.
Yeah. And every business wants to make money, and the idea behind all those loans that the government gave was so that the businesses could stay closed and they could still stay afloat. Like, that was literally the entire point, was to keep the businesses closed but keep them paying their employees. Like, the government gave trillions of dollars to small businesses to do that. So businesses should be applying for that. It's obviously still really hard, but yeah. I mean, you know what's, and this is a general statement, but like, it is really not that hard to wear a mask. Like, it's fucking not. It's pretty easy. Like, it's not that hard. It's really not that bad. It's not that big of a deal. It hardly inconveniences me even a little. And so, like, all these businesses and bars and everything that wants to open, just wear a mask. It's so easy. It's so easy to do. And so that's the thing. It's easy to to pile on this bar and these people because it went viral and it looks bad. The optics are bad.
Stay six feet away. The huge sign while everyone is just packed into the pool was my favorite picture.
The optics are really bad, but like really, will there be any deaths as a result of that party?
Yeah, I guess we'll have to keep an eye on like Kansas City, St. Louis to see if there's a spike. But then I don't know. Can you trace it back to that? I don't know.
So will there be deaths as a result of this party? Probably not. Mm-hmm. Should we do everything we can to prevent people from dying? Probably yes. So I would say keeping people from dying is still a little bit more important than getting hammered in a bar.
Hot take.
In a pool bar. And like the virus can't pass through water. So that's a positive.
Yeah.
But the close proximity and all the sharing that's happening is problematic. And young people can still suffer from it. Like I was reading an article they can give it to old people, but there's all these young people who are suffering from strokes. And here's everything I know about the coronavirus. So young people are like getting weird strokes from it. Like people who never get a stroke are coming into hospitals with strokes and testing positive to coronavirus. The only thing I know about coronavirus is that really, really, really smart people whose entire lives they've been studying viruses, they say they don't know enough about the coronavirus.
Yeah.
So anyone who pretends to know that like, oh, viruses can't pass in water, viruses can't, you know, affect young people, viruses will die during the warm months. Like anyone who says that is lying because the smartest people are still learning things about the coronavirus. So just, I don't know what the final answer is because I've been playing both sides of the fence here.
Nah, I don't know either.
It's hard. I'm not going to, you know, shit on all these people, but they probably did the wrong thing. Have I done the wrong thing at parties like that? For sure.
Yeah. I didn't like the people who were like, even if there wasn't coronavirus, I would never get in that pool. I was like, okay, then you just hate fun. Because if like that, like, because there's a lot of people saying, ew, even with coronavirus, I'm not getting in that cesspool. It's like, but that is how this whole pandemic has changed our view on parties like that. But
yeah,
like,
we talked about it.
Come on. It's fun. It's fun as shit to do that. Have a pool party. Like, people love doing that. So don't act like you're above that when you're saying, even if there wasn't the coronavirus, I still wouldn't do it. You would do it. I know you
would.
Yeah. I know.
And I played golf this weekend with four people that I hadn't seen this entire time, you know, four new people. Mm-hmm. And so like, technically I'm probably breaking social distancing standards and
shame on you.
Yeah, exactly. And so like, we all are. There are degrees to this whole thing.
Yeah.
But you know, cast the first stones.
You guys you guys do some awkward high fives like Phil and Tiger and Peyton and Tom did their air fives and air fist bumps. That was some awkward air elbows.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they're just like going and hanging out and drinking after that. Yeah. All together. But on TV, they're like air elbow, air.
And the optics are important. People look up to those guys.
I don't look
guys.
Up to Tom Brady. I'll tell you that. Tom Brady, that guy sucks at golf. Like the fact that he is an 8.1 handicap and he doesn't know how to properly execute a drop is like, because you're a fucking cheater. Like, well, that's why.
That's a good take. But I didn't know
that. That's why. Like, he didn't know how to execute a drop and he's an 8 handicap.
I would have assumed you wouldn't have had to drop in a sand trap, which he did. Because I was like, I didn't think that was the rule. So I was like, no, that doesn't sound right. But I guess he did. So
no,
he's just I'm a 5.5 handicap. So.
Oh, yeah, sure you are. Sure you are. Well, I mean, you probably would have played better than Tom Brady did. All right.
Let's hold out.
All right, let's keep moving along to
final thoughts on the –
Final thoughts. I am heading down to the Ozarks in a couple of weeks. I might be at a bar And I feel like I'm going to get judged very hard for that decision. And I'm nervous about it. Like, I'm nervous of how I'm going to be perceived. I'm nervous about going to it. I'm nervous about getting coronavirus. I'm just nervous now about all of it. The optics, I care a lot what people think about me. And if people know that I'm in the pool at the Ozarks, I feel like I'm going to get judged. And so I'm worried about that.
Well, the good news is you won't be judged by our family, because they will not, they will reserve judgment.
Those are the names that are going through my head right now. All of my family members listening to this who will judge me. Those are all the only names going through my head. if I like go down there, I like won't be allowed to the family lake trip the next like 2 weeks later. I'll have to self quarantine before I get down there, or else no one's going to talk to me. That'll be an awkward lake trip. But I don't know. Should I go to a bar? Will they even be open? Like, will the backlash be continue and be severe enough that they're going to shut, you know, more bars down there? I don't know. But I might have to go investigate.
All right. do it for the pod. You're just there as a member of the media.
Yes.
Investigating.
Oh, that's a good spin zone. I'll just be like, I'm investigating for the podcast.
Uh-huh.
That's why I'm at Coconuts. Okay.
Yep.
All right. So moving on to openings this week, this is an invention that I think has some legs to go on beyond the coronavirus. We've got a barbecue vending machine at Jones Barbecue.
Yeah, so Jones Barbecue, which is the two sisters who were on Queer Eye when it was based in KC, they put a barbecue vending machine out in front of their restaurant. And so you can go and you can pick out like beef sandwiches, and it's like it's a temperature controlled, a vending machine. So like, you know, it's cold, so you'll get it cold and then it'll,
I was going to ask if it was cold or hot.
Yeah. Cause it's 24/7.
Okay.
And I think so anyways, you can just go grab a sandwich or something like that. Ooh. And, yeah, I go again. I'm straddling. I'm having a tough time deciding, like, if I want to do a hot take or not, because I see the benefit of this: more people getting barbecue when they want it if the restaurant's closed. But also the con, like barbecue, like literally the entire art of barbecue is based on temperature control, and like you're literally taking that out of it. You're putting it in a vending machine. And then you're allowing people to heat that up on their own. And it's like, probably what's the most important thing about barbecue? It's temperature control followed by seasoning.
Well, I mean, but I will say, and I've never had this vending machine. I have had Oklahoma Joe's shipment and it does travel very well.
It did. It's not as good, obviously, as getting it
travels well. And I don't know if these are coming with heating up instructions. This is, you know, just beefs, ham sandwiches, turkey sandwiches, burn in sandwich. Yeah. Temperature control is important, but, I thought you were going to say, cause now everyone's just mashing their hands on the same vending machine. Like, I don't know how that's any better
like,
than
like
just
barbecue sauce, covered hands
up on the vending machine. And we don't know yet. Like, you can't definitively say that coronavirus doesn't spread through barbecue sauce yet. We just don't know. Mm. So watch those saucy fingers on the vending machine.
But yeah, I was thinking it would be like, I do wonder if there's like seafood vending machines in like Boston or like 24 ounce beer seafood, can vending machines in New Orleans, or like,
I see the grossest thing I've ever seen in a vending machine is a hard boiled egg. That's gross. Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, like in one of those packages?
Yeah. Ugh. Like a mm-hmm. It's probably pickled. Whoa. All right. So that's opening. That's it at Jones Barbecue in KCK. Next, we got The Fix in Midtown. Is this a new restaurant opening up here?
So it opened in January, but then obviously closed down in March. But I think they're now starting back up again. But it was one of these restaurants that opened right before everything shut down. So I plus it's a vegan restaurant, so like I haven't gone and tried it, but it's on 31st and something like that in Midtown, like 31st and Main, or
it's 600 East 31st Street, so it's
But it's vegan restaurant. I guess when they were open in January, they had like lines out the door, and it was pretty popular. Sounds like a good place if you're a vegan food.
Or if not, it looks good.
Yeah, the I like that they call. So the owner named the restaurant The Fix because the old. Who's talking?
We're recording a podcast here. Very serious.
Podcast. So it is the. So he named it The Fix because the old building was a drugstore, like that it originally went in. And so the tiles, like the really old tiles at the front of the at the front door, say drugs on them. And so he was like drugs, and like drugs are a fix. Yeah. And then he like, well, plant based food can fix your, you know, well being and all that good stuff. But it it looks more than just like. It looks like he's got some like dumplings and
yeah,
and
it's a cool menu. They have plant-based Mexican food, plant-based Italian dishes, plant-based like Thai so food you can get as well.
Whatever fix you need,
yeah, get the fix.
All the different. It's like a Seinfeld when Jerry convinced I can't
it's
remember
a classic
his name.
Seinfeld story. That's good. Who like Tim Watley or
no the Pakistan. The guy from Pakistan,
Babu,
to open up a restaurant that served everything.
Yeah,
And then close that restaurant and open up a Pakistani restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, classic, exactly like The Fix on 31st in Maine. Check it out.
Oh man! All right, that's openings this week. Next, let's move into what we try this week. I got to try some Artego pizza over on 39th Street. I always saw them on Groupon, and I this was a couple of weeks ago, and I actually did use a Groupon to get it.
I didn't know Groupon was still around. Good for you.
Yeah, Groupon's still around. Big time. I just bought a meat thermometer off Groupon. Really pumped about that. All right, let's see. But Artego pizza, I thought it was a pretty good pizza. The crust is like very like garlicky and good flavor in it, and I got the wings. They got the jumbo wings, like served peanut style. Which were also very good, a delicious homemade ranch. Groupon had a special, pretty good deal, pretty good pizza. I think I would go back when it was opened up. I've seen them have like drink specials, like all you can drink during a game for like $15 or something like that.
Yeah, too. They did so, a lot of things like that.
Some good pizza, some good wings. I enjoyed it.
Okay. I wasn't crazy about it. I didn't love it. I thought it tasted like too much like freschetta.
Mm. I honestly
crust is like thick and like
I almost got a like, little too much of like a the new Domino's crust vibe from it. Like they're trying too hard to dress up the crust a little bit.
Now I'm currently on Groupon right now looking for a meat thermometer. So
it's a good deal.
I'll find it. All right. Well, yeah. Maybe I'll give Artego a second try and try something.
Wings were good. I would try the wings.
The wings look good on their Instagram, but yeah.
Wings pizza. Are pretty grammable, though.
Yeah. All right. I tried the new formerly Tantera Resort, now Margaritaville.
Oh, shit. I didn't know it was Margaritaville.
Yeah, their golf course.
So that is awesome.
So it's the formerly the Tantera golf course. Now it's the Margaritaville golf course. Kev, all of their like shirts and like hat pins and ball markers and everything are Margaritaville branded.
Damn, that's
so
great.
Like if you can't get that at any Tommy Bahama in the entire world, now you can go get that at the actual golf course. So the course is really hard. It's difficult. Didn't play well. It's got a lot of sand traps. The gentleman I was playing with hit three different sand traps on one hole.
Wow.
So that's there's a impressive. Lot of, they do a lot of these things where they put traps in the fairways and then like traps 40 yards in front of those traps. So if you like hit a shitty shot out of the sand trap, it will go into the trap in front of you.
So would you consider that like Tantera and Margaritaville? Would you consider that the St. Louis side of the lake?
I don't know.
I was trying to figure that out too.
I don't think so. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I don't really understand what's the St. Louis side and what's the – maybe it's just truly east and west. I don't know.
I don't think there is really a thing. I think people just say that to sound like they know what they're talking about.
Like one side's better than the other.
Yeah. But a tough course, but really fun. And, you know, it's just fun saying you played at the Margaritaville golf course. So that's what I tried this week. Again, I wasn't swimming in the pool, but by some people's standards, I was probably breaking social distancing requirements. And I'm not perfect. No one is. Cast the first stone. Terrible. Yep. Mm-hmm. Jesus.
Yep. All right. Well, that's what we tried this week. We got into our coronavirus thoughts.
That's kind of our first time, dude.
I know. That was also my personal pine tar, too. Just that I told everybody to shut up and not talk about the Lake of the Ozarks and what was going on down there. Just shh. And it all blew up.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's it for the front half. Fun interview this week. We got Chris Myers from Crane Brewing on to talk a little beer, a little bit about one of our favorite places, Raytona Beach, home of Crane Brewing. All right. Today we are joined by our guest, Chris Myers. Chris is the co-founder of Crane Brewing in Raytown here just outside of Kansas City. Chris, where I wanted to start, I saw you guys made an announcement on Twitter that you are going to be reopening once we get through all this. And you were thinking about like June 1st-ish. Is that still kind of the plan for you guys right now at the tap room?
There's been a couple of times now where we've like had a plan, we're going to do a thing, and then we've kind of retracted just that next day some update comes out. First it was home delivery, and then like the night we announced that, we kind of talked to partners and decided, you know, right now in the interim, that would be amazing for us. It really would. But we've got so many accounts, you know, bars and restaurants that are still doing to-go stuff and liquor stores and that are supporting us that, you know, we'd rather keep things moving through that. But then we announced that we were going to, you know, we had a really good plan, I think, to open the tap room, and we still do whenever we hit the right date. But it's just so much stuff is still going on and there's so much information, it's hard to really know. So we're looking at minimally June 1st. And as that date approaches, you know, we'll kind of decide to whether we have a hard open or not.
Yeah, we were just talking about on our last podcast, like it's really hard to keep up with the rules. We thought the 10-10 rule was still in existence, but I don't know if that still is. So like, who knows by June 1st, like what the rules were even be, but did you guys have a plan to try to just like keep people kind of distanced and be able to come drink in the tap room?
So we've taken this time to kind of renovate part of our barrel room that we've used for events and that way we have more seating or at least more spread out. So rather than just our tap room, because our tap room's not big. We discussed doing a reservation system. That way it's, you know, people know exactly when they can show up and how long they can stay. We've discussed, you know, obviously that also gives us a break to sanitize and clean everything in between mm-hmm. every guest that comes in. So I think our plan is about as good as you can get right now. It's just still the balance of, you know, as more businesses open and the numbers keep going up, it's a weird mix between taking care of our employees and getting our business back to normal as soon as possible and, you know, giving our guests an experience because they're followers of ours and they've been supportive of us and we want to give them some kind of normalcy back where they can come in and have a beer safely. And then also just kind of a balance of, you know, is it time? Is it ready? You know? So it's really, really tough.
So I'm sure you've had some beer that has maybe been like going bad. Have you just been hammered for the last like 2.5 months? Because like someone's got to drink the beer before it goes bad, right? So you and maybe your other co-founders and maybe the other brewers have just been slugging beer at, you know, just because it's available and it's going to go bad if you don't.
We've tried to be creative. We were fortunate that we didn't have anything, you know, right at the beginning of this that was super time sensitive. A lot of the sours, we do have a good shelf life, a lot of the farmhouse ales. We we hadn't put out, you know, brand new IPA right off the bat, not knowing what was going to happen. We've done a lot of things with packaging to where we've taken beer that was in kegs, and some of it we've been able to transition into cans to, you know, to make it to-go sales. Right off the bat, our distribution fell off a cliff. All of our distributors emailed us and said, you know, these orders that we were going to pick up tomorrow are canceled. All future orders are canceled. So we were thinking, okay, we're going to brew whatever we can with the ingredients we have, and we're going to package whatever beer is already brewed, and then we're just going to have to shut down. You know, if no one's buying beer, surely there's no way we can sell enough beer through the tap room, you know, going from 4-state distribution to just the tap room. But people have, we've been blown away by the local support. So lots of people are drinking lots of beer right now. But yeah, especially when
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. I've been stone cold sober this whole time.
I don't believe you. Right when this happened, I kind of had a discussion with my wife because we do have 3 kids. One of them was under 5 months at the time. And both of our main sources of childcare both have health risks. And so we kind of told them to stay away. And so I started working from home immediately. I'd go into the brewery late at night or early in the morning or just sometime when I knew no one else would really be there. And so I did that for the last, you know, month and a half. And so I started. And then this phenomenon called quarantine beer chug showed up.
Yes.
And it started in KC by guys up in like Liberty and small group of friends. Now it's up to like 300 something thousand people across the country. And so I'm sitting at home and I'm thinking, you know, what can I do? We don't have events, we don't have tastings, we don't have anything. What can I do to stay relevant and keep some sanity? And so I started chugging a beer every day. And I did that for over a month. And
thank you for your service.
I went through my collection, some stuff we had at the brewery, some stuff some friends gave me, beers that we had done before that I didn't have anymore. And so every day I chugged a different crane beer. I even did some beer cocktails.
Yeah.
I did some solidarity chugs from other breweries that have helped us during this time.
Bravery. So your bravery is just off the charts.
What were the like hardest of the crane to chug? What was the hardest one to chug and what was the easiest one to chug?
Probably the hardest, we have a beer called Donatos. That's a barrel aged dark sour. It's like 12%. And so you combine like the acidity with just the being a big beer. That knocked me on my butt.
Yeah.
Because I drink strong beer, but not that quickly on a regular basis. The other one that really killed me was I decided to skip a night. I just not in the mood for it. I skipped a night. So then the next night to make up for it, I chugged a whole 750. And so I poured it into 3 glasses and I did glass to glass to glass. And that was another, like that hurt me. Like there's bloopers I posted where I cut the scene of me chugging it where I'm like laying on the floor. I think it's that beer, laying on the floor, just like moaning pain. it was fun. And I'd like to say that's impressive, but I've got another friend up in Nebraska, Cosmic Eye Brewing, who he is still not stopped. He's done a chug a day. I think he's on like day 50 something, day 60 something. When you think about it, it's a beer, but it's just the, you know, the how quickly it becomes normal to be like, I could chug a beer right now.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
Chris, working from home for you, I know like you run the business and you're the co-founder and there's a business behind, brewing, but working from home from you, can that be like kind of fun? Have you tried anything? Like obviously you have some origins in home brewing. So have you tried anything while at home with like messing with a new beer or a new strain of yeast or barrel aging something different that, okay, you can do this on a small batch, kind of like back to your roots as a home brewer. And then, you know, let's see if we can scale it up once things get back to normal.
I'd like to say that, but it's a matter of just the timing. I mean, especially early on, it was just every day. It's kind of like, what can we do today to make things better? What can we do tomorrow? It was a lot of reaching out to other brewers. You know, what's everyone doing to make this work? Shortly into this process, friends of ours at Diametric in Lee Summit, they started the Together We Can event. I don't know if you've seen that. About every 2 weeks they've done it through quarantine where they've let all the other local breweries drop off beer. They've dealt with the permits and organizing and pre-orders for people who, basically people are coming up saying, you know, I want to support all of my local breweries. I guess I could drive around town all day and buy a loaf from everybody. And they said, what if we brought everyone to one place where they can safely, you know, pop their trunk, we'll put their orders in there, they can drive off, everything's managed. And that's been a lifesaver for a lot of breweries. And so kind of in the interim too, they're another similar brewery for a lot of breweries in town to where they were just a taproom brewery, meaning everything they did was in kegs. They sold it by the pour. How can they efficiently do to-go beer sales? And so we started letting them come in and use our canning line. And so we were canning their beer for them kind of as a trade-off, just because we could, and we love them. And then luckily I had some good friends like you guys kind of reach out to, you know, make use of this time, kind of reach out and still connect with community in a way that we haven't been able to do.
So there's not like a secret beer that you've been working on that's like barrel aging, and then maybe Kevin and I get first access to it or something like that. Like that's not going on.
I think there's something we could hook up. I would say we've gotten a lot more beers out than we had planned through this process, simply because where we would normally brew a beer for all of our distribution, you know, maybe 60 barrels at a time, we're now doing like 10, 15 barrels of a beer because we want to be able to, you know, we want to make sure that it's something we can sell a reasonable volume to go and to keep people coming in week to week. So one beer I'm excited about tomorrow we're canning is a strawberry rhubarb goza. That's like a quintessential Midwest type, you know, combination. There's some breweries who do it that people seek out. People have asked us to do it pretty much since we opened. And so we're excited to kind of, this time has given us a chance to kind of squeeze in a beer like that into our run. So like I said, I don't know when we're going to be able to release it, but I'm super excited to get that in the cans tomorrow.
That's awesome. So I feel like maybe it's because one of the first beers that I tried from you guys was a sour beer. But why do you think people are so afraid of sour beers? Is it just the name? I feel like because sour cream gets a bad rap because it has sour in it. If sour cream had a better name, it'd be way more popular because sour cream is delicious. It just has a bad name. So like, why do you think people are so afraid of sour beers?
I would agree. I think sour sounds a little bit more harsh than if you would say tart. If you say it's a tart beer, that doesn't sound like sour. When you think of something going sour or souring, it's the same process. Like it's bacteria that we use to sour the beer, but it's not spoiled. It's especially a lot of the styles we do. Sour can also be really broad. So I know a lot of people said, I've had a sour beer. I hate sour beer. But, you know, maybe they had like a super complex barrel aged like Flanders or something. I think you can find certain ones that are a little bit more introductory. A lot of the sours we do are Berliner Weisses or Gozas. They're just like a really clean, lemony, you know, lactic sourness. And so they're refreshing. And you don't have a lot of, like, there's not any funk to them.
Yeah.
And then we pair them with different fruits and stuff. It's very different.
Yeah, that's what I think people, like, I didn't understand until I started having a couple sour beers. I didn't understand that it would be so refreshing, like on a hot day, like a sour beer, because it is mixed with like a citric fruit, or I love the cucumber sours too, that I've seen a couple different breweries try it. So yeah, I wish people weren't so scared of them. And I think it's just that name.
I love sour beers. I think it was the first time I had a sour beer, Chris, was one of your guys's, and I didn't know I liked sour beer. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to give this a try. And, it may have been at your beer festival, right? Out in the Lost Township. Mm-hmm. I think I tried one of your sour beers out there and I was like, oh, now I love sour beers. And but that beer festival that you guys have out in Raytown, how long has that been going on? And did you guys start that before you were a company? Did the Festival of the Lost Township start before Crane Brewing existed?
Yeah, so this would have been the sixth year in September. We ended up canceling it this year because of everything going on. I know September seems a while ways away, but when we were dealing with like sponsors and just planning and everything, you know, no one feels comfortable about any a big event right now. So we decided, you know, we're going to put it off the year. But yeah, we brewed our first batch of beer September 9th, 2015. And I think we had that first beer festival like the next weekend. And it was, we had done that Imperial Stout with Union Horse with you guys when you were there. And so we weren't, because we weren't officially a brewery yet, we weren't able to pour our own beer.
That's
and
right.
So we had given you guys that to pour, and we had given another brewery a beer to pour. And that's so, yeah, right. So we had a beer fest before we were an actual brewery, technically, mostly because we built a good relationship with the Raytown community, and the Kiwanis Club had reached out to us and said, hey, you know, we're looking for another big fundraiser. What do you guys think about doing this together? And they've been a crucial part of that happening. You know, we host the festival, but they do a lot of the work as far as the volunteers and ticketing and stuff like that.
Yeah. I feel like you guys started that, and then it was just no looking back, because not only has that, you know, festival become like, I feel like nowadays in KC in the summertime, and not nowadays now, because this summer is going to be so weird, but you know, in the summertime, there's a beer festival literally every single Saturday, and you probably get asked all the time to show up. But that festival that you guys started, it just seems to be like one of the ones that everyone has to be at and everyone wants to go at go to. What do you think you guys brought to the table, not only with the festival, but mostly with your beer, that allowed you guys to distinguish yourselves and become like one of the larger, you know, microbreweries in the city?
I think as far as the festival goes, it's just, I think we're all pretty laid back people. And so I think the festival has kind of a chill vibe to it. We also recognize that we're super excited about all of our maker friends. So we tell people, you know, it's not just a beer festival. We invite distilleries and wineries and coffee roasters and tea blenders. And so there's a little bit of something for everyone. And now it's got to the point where we kind of have a size limit. And so we'll shoot out some invites, but we get a lot of people every year. You know, other people reach out to us and say, hey, I heard about your festival. Can we come this year? And that's a lot of fun to kind of always have new friends as far as industry people every year. And it's grown manageably. So it grows little by little every year, mostly by word of mouth, just because it's pretty much totally run by a nonprofit. So we're not able to, you know, do a lot of advertising from it. So that's fun. Brewery-wise, I have to thank the community. You know, we try and get out there as much as possible. We do a lot of events. We do a lot of stuff through like our Crane Cares initiative to kind of reach out to different organizations. Hopefully it's because we make good beer. But yeah, I think a lot of people are surprised by like kind of going back to your statement, like how small we are, because we're not that big of a brewery. But I think because of the kinds of beers we do, we're able to kind of stretch a little bit further. You know, we're able to share a beer with the right places and not kind of force our way anywhere. It's kind of, you know.
I think your logo is sick too. Like, I love your logo and your color schemes that you guys have. And I just think like the fact that you guys were doing sour beers and really no one else in the city was doing those when you guys came out, I think that really helped distinguish you. And your logo is just, it's one of my favorite things, because when you show up with like a six pack of cans and it has that logo on it, people are automatically like, whoa, what beer is that? If they don't already know Crane. So props to whoever came up with that logo.
Yeah.
Awesome.
How did you settle on Raytown for that festival, and then also for, because that's where your guys' tap room and brewery is actually located at?
Yep. So it pretty much, you know, I didn't grow up in Raytown. I didn't go to school in Raytown. I played soccer in Raytown when I was younger. That's about all I was really familiar with. But one of my partners had a business in Raytown, which is where the brewery's located. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of things had to fall into place, but one of them was that his former business went out of business, and suddenly he had a 17,000 square foot building, you know, that we could put a brewery in. And we kind of altered our plan some from the get go, but we knew we wanted to be a distribution brewery. And so we went into distro first, just knowing that it didn't really matter where the brewery was, as long as trucks could come and pick up the beer and get it where it needed to go, that was fine. and then we opened the tap room a year later. So kind of backwards, you know, most breweries open a tap room, kind of raise money, raise capital, and then open into distro, and we were the other way.
Yeah, and I can't tell you how hard it is for me to say Raytown, because Danny and I, we call it Raytona.
Raytona Beach?
Yeah, Raytona Beach out there.
Boca at Raytona. Arrowhead.
Boca Raton.
I like that.
I like Boca Raton too. But that's where, I mean, like I was like debating on whether I should pitch you this beer or not over the airways. Cause I was like, damn, this is actually a really good idea. And he's going to do this cause it's such a good idea. But we need like a Raytona Beach beer.
Mm-hmm. And you
have a Raytona Beach beer?
Yeah. We did it for the last year for our annual tiki event. So every summer we'll have to figure out something unique this summer, but we do an annual tiki night, and every year we do more and more tiki beers. So this last year we did Raytona Beach finally, and it was pina colada inspired. So pineapple, coconut, lactose, sour, just super nice and refreshing. And then I think this year we're going to scale it up to be able to can it.
Oh yes.
Can the Raytona Beach?
I cannot wait.
You got it. You got it. Like I said, not being from Raytown, I use the term adopted. The city is amazing. They worked really hard to get us in and were flexible with us. The community's been supportive. The other businesses have been super supportive. And it's kind of, they call it a first tier suburb. You know, wherever you are in the city, you feel like you're central. You know, you feel like your area is central. But Raytown, like I said, it's by the stadiums. It's like equidistant to downtown as it is to Lee Summit, as it is to Leawood. Between all the highways. And so I think, unfortunately, it's become kind of a drive-through city, but there's so much cool stuff going on. A lot of, you know, local makers doing really special stuff. Like if you go into our tap room, it's pretty rustic. All of our tables were handmade by a guy in Raytown that he doesn't have a huge presence, but he ships stuff all over the country.
What's his name?
Porter Furniture, Brett Porter. Okay.
We're looking for a dining room table.
There you go. There you go. He does beautiful stuff. But yeah, we love the city. But unfortunately, it does. I don't know if it's like bad. It just, I think it has a lot of opportunities, especially with the bike trail coming through. The Rock Island Trail goes right through our parking lot, and it will basically connect Lee Summit to the stadiums kind of through that corridor, which is nice. But yeah, we love the community.
Okay, so, then I don't even have to pitch you on the beer.
Yeah, that's awesome. Kevin, already,
well, I didn't know. I thought at first I was thinking like either maybe like a Mexican lager style beer with like kind of a hints of lime that might go well with a lime, because I'm thinking, you know, delicious on the beach.
I'm giving away all the secrets. I'm going to like at the same time, again, because we don't have a whole lot of ways of marketing ourselves as a small brewery.
Yeah.
But yeah, we do have a Mexican lager coming out.
Okay. Okay, yeah. So that was one idea that I had. And then the other, it was more basic, like a fruity IPA. Because, I mean, I was thinking, you know, the beach theme and all of that. So we're big on Raytona Beach. We love it. And I would love to see what your cans look like, too. Just because I've seen your other logos, which are really cool. And then one other thing that I think you do really well is just how you describe your beers. I was looking at your beer list, and like you describe a beer like it's great to watch a baseball game with. Like that makes sense to me. Like when sometimes the beers, the descriptions get too complicated. It's like you should taste, you know, this or that or this berry or whatever. It's like I like kind of base what kind of beer I'm going to drink around the activity that I'm doing. So the fact that you guys are describing your beers that way makes it way easier for an idiot like me, which is phenomenal. What's the beer you can have with baseball? The small ball. Boom. Perfect. Yeah. Small ball was Danny's nickname in high school too.
Yeah. Chris, it's just amazing to me. What amazes me is like Kevin just like shouted out two good ideas for beers, and they were already taken by you guys. I think it's got to be so difficult to stay original in the craft beer scene just because there's so many out there. How do you guys come up with the names for your beers? Because we talked to Rafi at Torn Label, and he said they kind of have a process where they just like sit around and throw out names and see who likes them. But I got to think it's near impossible to – it's like naming a band, you know? Like every band name ever has been taken.
I equate a lot of our beers to like our like kids, like your favorite kid. It's hard to say. So, I would say it's similar. I think there's sometimes where we have a beer in mind and off the get-go we're discussing kind of what we want to name it, what we want the branding to be for the label and stuff. And we do that kind of as a team. But there's other times where we're just one of us thinks of a really good name. It's just yeah. like, I'm going to write that down. That's going to fit uh-huh. for a beer in the future. Like, that's just too good of a beer name. So it's a mix. We do a really good job of bouncing ideas off each other, you know, throughout the brewery as far as what we want to do beer-wise.
And that's like styles of beers and types of beers. It's kind of a collaborative effort.
And it's a mix, too, of beers that we want to make that, you know, we say, this may not be, you know, we don't know how this is going to go. We haven't done a beer like this before. It's something, mm-hmm. something we want to brew and share. And then also, you know, what our consumers are asking for. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, what they're saying they really like right now, what they'd like to see from us. So it's a little bit of both.
Do you think Kansas City has a more sophisticated craft beer scene than others? And do you think that because Boulevard has been here and it's so big since, you know, 89, that has led to, you know, more people like yourself and Michael to become home brewers and then start their own thing, and then led to a more sophisticated, maybe is not the right word, but just like people who appreciate craft beer more here than others, than other places?
I think because we had Boulevard for so long and some other, you know, beer brew pubs and stuff that we had for a little while, but I think there was kind of a fear to start a brewery in the city for a little while.
Oh, okay.
And I think unless you're really traveling and visiting other cities, because it boomed in Kansas City, but at the same time it was booming everywhere. You know, it was growing in every major city. I think that as people had a better idea of what the scale of brewery could be, that, you know, you could start a brewery with a small system and a small, you know, shopping outlet. Like, it didn't have to be a huge commercial thing that you could make beer and share it and make it work as a business. And so that's what happened to me. I came from veterinary medicine before this. You know, most people in the brewing industry come from something else. Not everybody graduates from high school and says, I want to go straight to beer. But for me, it was visiting some local breweries. Cinder Block was a big one for me. The first time I walked into there and happened to be on a night that the owner Bryce was there and was giving tours and kind of really getting a good idea of the scale of that place and how much beer they were making and how they were wanting to do it in the community they were building in North Penn City. That's what really kind of clicked for me. And then wanting to learn more, I reached out to every brewery owner and brewer I could. And that kind of made me fall in love with the industry as a whole. Because most businesses, you say, hey, I like what you do. I want to do it too. They say, well, you know, good luck. Figure it out on your own. But brewing, it's every yeah. single person was come down, have a beer. Let's see what we can do to help you get started. Yeah. And that really pushed us.
And I know that you guys, I don't want to keep like harping on it because we've talked about your sours a lot, but I love your sours. Why did you guys decide to do sours more than anyone else? Was it something that you liked more? Was it something another brewer that worked from the beginning kind of liked more? Or what was it about sours that attracted Crane Brewing?
I'd say as a team, we came together because of styles of beers we like to make, you know, and
okay.
we could turn that into a brewery. We were fortunate that it was also a big void in the market when we started. Like I said, I mean, sour beers are some of the original beers as far mm-hmm. as, like, you know, people want to say that they're a new style, and they are becoming more popular in the U.S. and stuff, and they have for the last 4 or 5 years. But for us, I think it was the big difference was just the number of sours we make and that we make them year round and the different fruits or beets that
tea.
We add to them.
Yeah. The tea spice. Yeah.
So I think that was kind of a big push. And being, you know, growing in Kansas City, knowing that we're a local option, that when somebody needs, and they know they want to put a sour on tap, they know they can always get something from us. So that really helped. Kind of going back to your previous question too, I think Kansas City is really special. Just because we're so nice, And yes, we are really connected. You know, we're a big, small town. Everybody kind of knows everybody. I think a lot of the breweries that have opened in the last couple of years, somebody from that brewery came from another brewery. So we know each other really well. And I think there's a really deeper connection in Kansas City too, between like breweries and restaurants and chefs. And like, there's a whole kind of, you know, creative, everyone's just cheerleading for each other, which is really
nice. So yeah, we're just better than everyone is what you're saying, which I agree with.
In a humble way, though. We have to say that in a very humble way.
Yeah, in a humble way.
It's I love traveling, but I'm born and raised KC. I can't imagine living anywhere else.
Yeah. Last question on sours. It's sour tasting going in. It's sour smelling going out. Why do sour beers make my fart smell so weird and bad? Maybe that's just like craft beer in general. I've asked every craft brewer that we've had on so far this question.
Okay. I would say in general, I'd say it's because depending on the size of the brewery, they're finishing, you know, as they're packaging, there's probably a lot more yeast in the beer, you know.
Okay.
Craft beer, you're probably going to get a lot more adjuncts than you would, you know, whether it's brewed or other stuff being added to it. In our case, we hope it's good for your gut because it's the lactobacillus is live. The culture is one thing that's different about our sour beers compared to most breweries is we never boil or pasteurize. So the bacteria is live throughout the whole process. So you're getting a good culture there.
It's like probiotics. Like you're drinking probiotics basically when you drink Crane. It's good for you.
Yeah, I'm gonna cancel my Greek yogurt now. I don't need that. I'll just drink a sour beer for breakfast. Put that in my smoothie instead of Greek yogurt. Keep the gut healthy. Keep the gut healthy.
I think that's a good idea. Chris, I want to talk to you about a beer you guys made called Champ Stamp last fall, honoring a guy who put a Mahomes tramp stamp on his back. I've done plenty of idiotic things in my life and I don't have a beer named after me. So, what do I have to do? Like what do I have to do to get a beer named after me? Like, should I get a tattoo of, I don't know, Alex Gordon on my lower back?
Maybe an ankle tattoo of Alex Gordon. Yeah.
if you did that and then luckily got them to another World Series.
Okay.
Or got us to Super Bowl again.
Well, this came out in October, right? The Champ Stamp, didn't it?
Yeah. So this guy, and he's from Raytown. So that was kind of the other tie-in.
I knew that. Yep.
We talked about that on the show. It was awesome.
He grew up with one of our team members. And so that was kind of the connection. And, you know, it's not typically this something that we would totally jump on, but at the same time, we're passionate people. And so the passion that the guy has to get this done is what really impressed us.
It's good spin zone.
Yeah. And then also figuring out that we could also, again, going back to kind of some collaborations we've done with local organizations, that beer, the proceeds went to Patrick and the Homies, Foundation or 15 in the Mahomes Foundation. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of tied it all together for us. But yeah, Champ Stamp is just a good name for a beer too. Like I would order a million Champ Stamps. But that was, you know, it was something fun to do for this past season. And that's a good example of something you can never plan for. Like as soon as that happened, we released that beer and went through, I think we did like 400 cases and it disappeared like that. So people were wanting it again. And it's like, you know, we didn't brew anymore because, you know, if they don't win, if they do, you know, it's hard to plan. But we're just excited for the city, obviously, when stuff like that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, he gets to announce. Was it on Kimmel or Kimmel where he got called out and, you know, got to say, I'm from Raytown, Missouri.
Yep, he got it signed. I think he updated that tattoo and I think he updated it again once he got the, you know, the world championship.
Kind of nice. It.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a thing to be known for. I love it.
It sounds like the stamp is just growing on his back now at this point. And it will just keep adding Super Bowl trophies, hopefully. And maybe one day it'll go from the lower back just all the way up the back with Super Bowl additions there. I guess, you know, where I want to wrap things up, You talked a lot about how awesome the support has been that you've seen just kind of from the community buying your beer. Is the best way to support you right now, like and other local breweries, just, you know, going to liquor stores and buying beer, or is it going to restaurants and getting them? Like, kind of what's the best way to do it?
For us, it's a mix. I'd say for most of the breweries in town, especially if they're not distributing, obviously going to the brewery and getting it directly. For us, because we do have distribution in this area, you know, it helps us when you come by the brewery, but it also just whatever's convenient for you. If you're at the grocery store or something, pick up a six pack there. It means a lot. Every six pack matters.
And when you guys open back up, do you think, because last summer you guys started with the barbecue food truck out there, do you still want to try to serve food out there in some way?
Yeah, we've added a couple partners, kind of enhancing what we have available at the brewery. Again, planning a lot for like the trail when it opens, because we think that's going to be huge. We've got Quinto Coffee is there in the mornings during normal times, and he's kind of had to adjust his business some too. Wilma's Good Food, Chef Brett is our main food person there most nights when we're open. And then Heart Barbecue, if you haven't had it, I mean, he's been ranked nationally as some of the best barbecue you can get. We can't wait to have him back. He's been doing working with his friends at the Antler Room through all of this, so they've been keeping him going and, you know, keeping him creating and smoking. But yeah, we can't wait to have him back when this team.
Nice. Yeah, it just seems like Kansas Cityans just want to help each other, and yeah, I mean, the Antler Room, great place as well. So that's cool. Oh, that was all. Yeah, that was the only questions I had.
Me too. All right, Chris. Well, you know, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And then, man, I can't wait to get out there once that's possible. Have some beer and some barbecue with you. All right. Thanks to Chris for joining us. After that interview, I just really wanted to go have a sour beer because it's that season now. It's starting to get a little hot out. Very refreshing.
I can't wait to go and sit in their tap room, because their tap room is really cool. It, like, all the, and he talked about this, but all the furniture is like custom built, and it's really, really cool look on the inside. And I love drinking at the brewery. I just like love the smell of it all.
And I need to try the barbecue out there too.
Heart Barbecue, world class. Mm-hmm. I love drinking at the place that it's made, because if you do have questions, you can ask, and it's not like you're being like a snob. Like, you can just, they probably want to talk about it. So we got to get out there. We got to do a trip.
Yes. All right. So thanks again to Chris for joining us. Next we got, we were in the news. Missouri was with the Ozarks. We talked about the negative press, but we got some people who like us. And that's looking like J.E. Dunn's going to be the general contractor for Apple's new campus.
Yeah. Apple is building a new campus in Northwest Austin. So Austin house prices are probably, you know, going to be real reasonable after this. But they're building a $1 billion office, 75,000. Oh, no.
Yeah, $1 billion.
Yeah, about 7,000 employees will be there, or they have 7,000 employees in Austin. So they're moving them to this new campus in Northwest Austin. J.E. Dunn gets to be the...
Kansas City's own.
Yeah, so again, just putting Kansas City on the map. Thanks, J.E. Dunn. But it looks like pretty sweet campus.
All right. check it out. It is some cool renderings. I do think it is funny, these tech companies putting a lot of money into physical buildings when we just found out that everybody can do their job from home. But that's a different tale.
not as good. Kevin. We need face-to-face interaction.
Right. Let's see. Oh, next up, I'm going to say something nice about St. Louis. It's been a while. We were like saying a lot of nice things about St. Louis for a while, and it's been a couple of minutes. My girlfriend's from St. Louis, so I get to visit from time to time. I said something really nasty about the smell of the St. Louis air mm-hmm. a couple podcasts ago. So now I'm going to say something nice about St. Louis. And I'm going to say this as seriously as possible, that Forest Park in St. Louis is actually really, really cool. I had, honestly, when I got there, I was like, why aren't you St. Louisans bragging about this more? Because I had never heard it. I guess you have more St. Louis.
I'm rolling my eyes, Kevin, because the only thing I don't like about Forest Park is how GD much people from St. Louis talk about Forest Park. They don't shut up about it. So, like, you're
going I've never heard of it.
It's all I hear about.
I'd heard
a
lot.
It's like, well, does Kansas City have a Forest Park? No. Well, so, that's like literally their only argument.
Okay. Well, that is a good argument. That's the only argument I might listen to, that they have something cooler than us, and that's Forest Park. I would describe it because it has the zoo, it has 27 holes of golf, has like their art museum, has kind of their outdoor theater for Broadway shows. So all of that, all in one park.
It's pretty centrally located too.
St. Louis, I never know where I am because everything is like highways and I just get lost every time. I'm just like, I don't know where we are. But
you just look at where the nearest Barnes Jewish Hospital is, and that's how you can kind of locate yourself in St. Louis.
Yeah, and I was impressed by it. It was a beautiful park, and I was honestly saying in my head that, man, I wish Kansas City had something like this with this big park and golf course, everything all right there. It'd be like if you had the Nelson Swope Park and Starlight in the Zoo, like all in one space. Plus, well,
there's
the
a
golf
lot of
right
it
there.
Right there.
Yeah, yeah, but
it's
not
just
like
a little out of the way. And
yeah, it was pretty cool. And I will say that. But that's it. That's the only nice thing I'm going to say about St. Louis today.
Okay. Okay.
All right. So next we're going to play. Oh, dude, we have not played this game since like episode one.
Okay. Is it mostly, really?
Yeah, dude. I mean, it's hard to find. It's hard to find positive news stories. Maybe we've done it a couple of times. We're going to play Walk the Line. I have found some news stories from both sides of the state line in Kansas City. And I'm going to have Danny guess which side of the state line that it comes from. All right. So first up, let's go with I tried to find some positive news, too. I've been complaining a lot how all the news is just coronavirus. So try to find
we
some.
We won't contribute to that.
Yes. Even though that's what we spent our whole opening talking about.
Yeah. And we all have right. a segment called Personal Pine Tar.
Right. All right. So musicians host mini concert for Senior Center. Which side of the state line do you think this is happening on?
That sounds like
singing
Kansas
old people.
Because there's so many senior living homes in Kansas. So I'm going Kansas.
Ding, ding, ding. That would be Olathe. Out in Olathe, Kansas, there are a lot of out-of-work musicians right now. I guess that's maybe a common statement to make.
Yeah.
But especially right now, musicians, you know, there's no gigs to play. There's no weddings. There's no birthday parties, any of that. So a lot of out-of-work musicians. So this is actually Mikey Needleman. I've seen his band, the Mikey Needleman Band, before. So he organized some musicians to get together. And go out and tour different retirement homes and bring some music out there from a safe distance, of course.
Needleman?
Mikey Needleman, the Mikey Needleman Band. I think he's an Aquinas guy, maybe. But, yeah, I've seen him play at K-State. Good cover band, a lot of fun.
Probably had a sweet nickname in college.
All right, so you got that one right. That was the first news story. Next news story, police rescue owl from soccer net.
I'm going Missouri. We get some owls over here. I know a lot of people in my neighborhood that have owls in their backyard.
Wrong. It was actually in Kansas. There's not a lot to do for the Merriam Police Department right now, I guess. But
I guess that's
a concerned citizen called the police department about the owl. Four officers responded to the call.
We have owls all the time.
Yeah, and the officer said, I'm sure they never thought in a million years they're going to have to come across something like this. You kind of roll your eyes,
you kind of just have to roll with the punches and adapt to it and try to handle it as best you can. And the officers worked together, detangled the owl, and set it free. So the police were glad they called them. So if you see an owl stuck in a tree, call the police. Or stuck in a soccer net. Call the police. All right. So
what a bad owl. You hear like owls are supposed to be like these elite hunters and like the majestic birds.
Great eyesight. Come on.
Getting stuck in a soccer net's a bad look for owls.
Yeah. Maybe should have let Darwin have his way there. All right. Next one. Penguins. Local penguins visit local art museum.
Yeah. Mo, baby.
Yeah.
Went to the Nelson.
You hear about this? I saw this. Penguins, I guess they're very social animals, and zookeepers were looking for ways to enrich the penguins' lives during this shutdown where they don't get to have any interaction. So they took them to the art museum, and the art director was very happy.
Julian, they just did it for the gram. Yeah. This is all for the gram.
All for the gram.
The pictures are very cute.
Yeah, there are some cute pictures. Apparently, the penguins like Caravaggio more than Monet, and the penguins were Peruvian.
All right, we got to stop this segment, Kev, because we sound like a local news at 10. like news at 10, and it's like Laura Martz reading off, apparently the penguins like Caravaggio more than
Monet.
Who would have thought?
Maybe. And they're Peruvian, so they spoke Spanish to them.
Yeah, I'm putting a kibosh on that story immediately because you sound like Larry Moore and I'm Laura Martz, and we're just
At least I get to be Larry Moore in that situation. I'm okay with that.
I'll be Laura Martz. she holds up.
Timeless Laura Martz. All right, but those are the three stories. 2 for 3, not bad there.
I'll take
getting those right. That's pretty good. All right, so that will lead us into our mixed plate, right? Time for the mixed plate.
Yep.
All right, 3-day weekend. Everyone's coming off the 3-day weekend. You might be having a little, you might have had some Memorial Day fun, barbecued, drank some beers. Maybe you're hungover and it's Tuesday. We're talking the worst activities that you have to do hungover. And, man, we came up with these lists fast.
It was very easy to come up with this list. I think the harder list is, like, favorite things to do when hungover because it's just, like, there's only one answer. It's just lay on your couch.
Yeah.
And watch bad movies.
Yep. All right. So let's get into this. This is an even episode, so that means Kevin is going first. I'm going to take this one off the board first. I'm going to go with going to work. Just a terrible feeling. Maybe it was a Sunday night football game or a Thursday night football game or just, a happy hour that maybe went a happy 4 hours and you got to show up. Grind, get into work the next day, not fun to do, and you just got to suffer through it, and you can't, a lot of times you just can't tell anybody, so you can't complain, you just have to keep it to yourself, and I hate it. Going to work, terrible.
All right, okay, that's not bad, but it's not the worst, because my meat number one for worst things to do when hungover is having a serious discussion with your significant other.
Oh, God.
Oh. Like, if you're still dating and maybe you got too drunk the night before and you've got to hear, or maybe you're still dating and you've been spending too much time with the pros, or maybe you're married and you they want to talk about whatever.
You stayed at the Peanut for too long on a Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah, or like, you have to talk about what paint color you're going to do the kitchen. Like, seriously, folks, having a meaningful discussion with a significant other while hungover is meat number one.
Yeah, that's a good meat number one. That is tough. All right. My meat number two here, I'm going to go with going to church. Going to church hungover is
not fun at all. You know, the Catholic guilt starts to set in because you could light a flame off of your breath because it's just pure just alcohol you're breathing out. You're usually around some judgmental answer uncles, judgmental parents looking at you like, I know that guy was out late last night because he looks like crap. And he probably wore that Ralph Lauren polo out to the bars last night.
Yeah. Yeah. Like college hangovers.
Yeah. Just hangovers. Bad. One time I was so hungover in church, couldn't find the water fountain, went to the back of the church where I was directed to go, where the usher lady said the water fountain was. This was in college. There was no water fountain. There was just a nice, clear bucket holding water. What do you call it? Like a jar with like a spout. Nice, fancy, okay. Clear glass one. And so I just undid the spout and drank the water and I closed it up. And I was like, I knew that was holy water for people to take home, but I needed water and I could not find a bathroom or water.
Did it cure your hangover?
Yes, I was magically cured.
Not magic, Kevin.
Oh, yes.
The Holy Spirit.
The Holy Spirit cured me from that hangover.
All right.
Just kidding. The Holy Spirit cannot help a Rumpelman's hangover. That's a fact.
No. Yeah, that's true. The that was always the worst in high school or in college when you were like home from college and you were like afraid to give the peace sign because your breath smelled.
So you just act very
like peace. All right.
Peace is a word where you just,
peace. Peace.
You're breathing all over.
All right. My meet number two. Again, this is an easy one. Traveling. Whether you're driving back from the vacation.
I had that, yeah.
Or you're flying back. Like being in the airport, traveling, going through security. The only good thing about that is you have a clear conscience to just eat as much McDonald's as you want because you're at an airport. So you don't have any choice. So you just get to eat McDonald's guilt free at airports. And so, but being hungover at an airport, traveling, maybe you're driving back.
Yeah. Road trip.
Yeah.
A hungover drive back from the Ozarks is a death sentence. Just a death sentence. It's a,
how about
it's
from terrible. Moab, Utah to Denver. God, how about that?
Yeah.
How about that? How about from Tuscaloosa, Alabama to Kansas City.
God.
When
we got to leave your RV behind.
There's four of us switching off every 45 minutes because we can't stay awake. And we're just dead. Just dead. And it's like 2 a.m. by the time we get back.
Oh, that was miserable.
Traveling is my meet number two.
Oh, that's good. Damn, I should have known that was going early because I had the road trip drive home, but I should have encompassed traveling and taken that one earlier when I had the chance. I'm going with my side number one. I'm going if you've got to do like any type of cleaning the next day.
Yes.
So, and I'm talking indoor and outdoor. They're both bad. Because the worst part is it involves you bending over and standing back up and just throwing off your equilibrium, making you nauseous. Your head's already pounding. Your stomach's not feeling good. All the bending over, standing back up. You've got to pour it, like, you know, the wounded soldiers out down the sink. And then the sink just becomes this gross, disgusting beer, vodka, whiskey smelling thing that makes you want to puke when you walk by it. You might have to pick up beer cans in the yard and you might just want to lay down in the yard and take a nap. But goddamn, cleaning hungover is just the worst.
I think this kind of falls in there, Kev, but one of my favorite stories ever is one time you were hungover, and this is a story about you, but you were hungover at mom and dad's and dad asked you to come outside and help him rake.
Yeah.
And you puked. You puked while raking and then just tried to like rake some leaves up or rake some leaves over the puke. And dad's like, what do you got there, bud? What are you doing over there? As you're like, because I think maybe
that was so cruel. He knew I was hungover. That's why he made me go out and do yard work. There's no yard work that needed to be done.
cleaning yard. Yeah, that's
fine. Yeah.
All right. My side number one, I'm going family dinner.
Oh.
when you just want to order pizza.
Mom's going to be offended.
Because mom would always judge. You get judged by Kathy Ritz hardcore. And so we would always do dinners on Sundays. And like some Sundays are better than others. Mm-hmm. And I just remember being like, oh, like I don't want to, you know, I have stuff to do in the morning, so I can't have a glass of wine and maybe ease this hangover a little bit. I just have to stick with water, and I'm not eating because I'm hungover. And so I'm just getting judged by mom for not eating the meal she cooked. Yeah, uh-huh. And I don't want to talk to anyone. I mean, my hangovers are just like, I don't want to talk to anyone. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do anything. So
making big decisions. That's why that was your meat number one.
So yeah, family dinners.
Yeah,
I would say when you're hungover, it's tough. Now, if you have a Sunday, or if your Monday isn't that bad, and you can have a couple of glasses of wine with dinner, and maybe fix your hangover a little bit, then family dinners are great.
Yeah.
But you're unbearably hungover, and mm-hmm. you have to work early, and you can't have that glass of wine.
Mm. Hmm. All right. Let's go side number two here to finish up my meat plate. Mixed plates. I'm going with shopping. It can be anything, but you know, maybe you already had plans to do some shopping, whether that be, you know, the Home Depot, Bed Bath and Beyond, if you have enough time, whatever it may be. If you've got to get up and you know, drag yourself out there, deal with the parking lots, deal with a lot of people, have to like make decisions. Like with your money,
the worst. Yep. Again, grocery shopping when you're hungover is the worst.
Yeah, nothing like, sounds like good.
Meal planning for a week.
Ugh. Yeah, like what do you want to eat this week? Frozen pizza. I'm good.
I don't
that
care.
Every day,
like, shells and cheese. Make it. Buy five boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shopping. I had grocery shopping on mine, but
it's terrible.
Grocery shopping and just shopping in general is the worst. All right. My final side number two. I'm going with podcasting.
we've learned that.
Yeah, we've complained about it a little bit, but some of those Mondays after Chiefs games, when we were putting up, the last thing I wanted to do was like find content.
I just drove 4 hours home from St. Louis. I mean, luckily I wasn't hungover, but I was low-T'd out. Driving is like mentally consuming.
It is.
Oh, it's tough.
But putting together a show when hungover, it sucks sometimes.
You just like want to be like, say your line for Kansas City, by Kansas City, we're the Ritz brothers. Chiefs won, yeah.
And we'll homes. We love see you around Kansas City.
There's some stuff opening up, and the Chiefs won, and then there's some stuff closing, and here's an interview. All right, mixed plate. Wasn't that fun? And coming up with a mixed plate idea, hungover, was like.
Kevin and I will just sit. We'll just sit on the Silence. Zoom, or if we're in person, just sit there and just stare. And like, we'll have the Zoom open, and we're not even talking, and we're just trying to like think of a mix plate. And we're just like, "Have you thought of one yet?" And it's like, "No, I haven't been thinking at all."
No, I'm actually on Twitter right now, just checking out what's going on.
I've been on Instagram for 5 minutes, and was I supposed to be thinking of a mix plate?
Oh shit. Yeah, that's a good one. I had five written down and we got to all of them.
Yeah, I had cooking on there. Like, I hate cooking. When I'm hungover, I had like in my discussion one, like talking about the bills or like reviewing accounts with money and that.
I also was gonna say having a chatty Uber driver when you're hungover.
That might be like,
fuck, dude, I'm hungover. I don't want to talk to you. Like, I'm good.
Like you're going to pick up your car.
Let's just go get my car. And when I get out, if you shoot me in the back of the head, that's okay. Like, whatever. I don't give a shit. I'm so hungover right now.
You can give me a 2 as a rating.
Yeah, I don't care what rating you give me. Just get me there, blast the AC, and get me out. Yeah. Shut up. I don't care about your podcast.
That was it.
Stop talking to me.
Yeah. Cleaning the house.
That's a good list.
Yeah.
It's a good list. That's a good list. All right. What are we brewing up? Are we brewing up anything for next week yet?
We've got
some potentials. Stuff. We got some pans on the stove. Or what do you say?
Yeah. Yeah, cooking.
We got some food in the oven right now. Some things that are cooking, some guests
some
that are
pies. Cooking.
So it's exciting. We're opening up to sponsorships too. We're ready for you. If you want in, let me know. We'll promote the hell out of your business as you're ready to start opening back up and you want Kansas City's our best local podcast. We're doing that right now. Shit. See, we didn't even know about the nominations happening, and now we need to continue to remind people to go vote for us.
Put this at the beginning.
Yes.
Welcome Kansas to Stay City. Your Line. Vote for us.
Yeah, Kansas City Magazine, best local podcast. So we're under like the arts, politics, and media section. Go vote for us. Tell your friends to vote for us. Email it. Spam people. Tell them to vote for us. We want to win in back-to-back years. So please go vote for us. That would be awesome.
Dynasty.
Going for the dynasty. That's it for this week. Be sure to follow us on social media at State Your Line. And we'll see you around, Kansas City.